Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, there's that focus.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah, all right.
There we go.
Yep.
I just have one question. Where's the body of the person you murdered?
It wasn't a murder. It was just a fight, and he's sitting right in the middle square.
Wow. Welcome to Highly Questionable. Somehow I'm the one being made fun of, despite the fact that Dominique looks like Jackson Pollock painted his shirt but didn't have enough money for other colors.
Oh my gosh. I texted this to Charlie. I said, how long does it take till Pablo makes some pretentious art reference to my shirt? Like, it's, you are, like, that is so sad, Pablo. Like, I want to laugh at it and make fun of you, but I'm more disappointed than anything.
I mean,
if that's not the most obvious nonsense pseudo nerd joke you can come up with, like Jackson Pollock.
Hold on.
I feel like I know mine.
Yeah, Mina, nice work, Mina.
Who do you have more faith in this weekend, Gonzaga or UConn?
So one of the best stories in the entire tournament is the fact that Paige Becker is the star freshman, the player of the year for UConn, and Jalen Suggs, their star freshman, the face of the men's tournament. They're childhood friends. They have been. They are buddies. They are bonded. Their families talk. It's fantastic. And so what do we do on HQ? We make them enemies somehow, even though they're not playing in the same sport, and even though this question is very clearly contrived. So I will indulge it for a second here. I will say this. Gonzaga and what they're doing is mind-blowing. It makes me feel very stupid because my entire conception of the men's tournament is that this is a 68-team chaos-generating machine. It is entirely random. But what they've done, win 27 straight games by double digits with three NBA players on the floor and look awesome the entire time, they have an argument to be the best team we have ever seen. Keep in mind, Indiana, when they won and went undefeated in the mid-70s, that was 32 teams. No one has done it this dominant as Gonzaga, so I will make them the winners of a very fake and vaguely problematic comparison that we've agreed to make.
Yeah, Pablo's right. It's Gonzaga. I mean, they have been absolutely crushing opponents in the tournament. Average margin of victory, 24 points, which I believe is historic. And when you watch them, they look like an NBA team playing college kids. The ball movement, the pacing, the shooting, they are incredible. And actually, the phrasing of the question, maybe it's less problematic and more ironic because we used to talk about UConn women's this way back yes. when they were dominating teams. Now, UConn plays close games and they're still really good, but Gonzaga is great.
Yeah, I find myself a lot more interested in the women's tournament this year. I've watched more minutes and more full games of the women's tournament this year. So maybe the competitiveness does matter because you're right. Gonzaga has the better coach left in the Final Four. They have the better players, probably three of the best players left in the tournament. So when you have these type of upsets like that, it's normally about guard play. They have the best guard. It's normally about experience. They have some seniors and juniors who are contributing at this point. It's about coaching again. They have the best coach. So it's hard for me to look at that and see some weakness for them other than maybe randomness. But on the other side, we're looking at a Final Four where Arizona maybe is the odd team out, but the other three teams have coaches who have won championships. And the other three teams have a pair or more of like top 25 level players. Like Ari McDonald from Arizona is explosive. She can shoot. She's fun to watch. But she alone is not going to give UConn any problems. But after that, either team that UConn plays is going to be coached by a coach in Vanderveer or Staley who actually have won national championships before. UConn only beat South Carolina earlier in the season in overtime. So they could certainly lose to that team. And Stanford has a 6'1 forward who can dunk, which is always exciting, and Haley Jones who can ball. So I could see UConn losing. I almost feel like if you give me UConn or the field, I take the field. That's not true on the men's side.
Mm. South Carolina, the Gamecocks, they held Texas to a 0 point fourth quarter. Like, that is so crazy. And I will never not say that team name without feeling uncomfortable.
How should Joe Burrow feel about the Bengals if they pass on Penei Sewell?
So Todd McShay's mock draft for many people is kind of like the 538 electoral map or the New York Times needle. Like, you just sort of watch it obsessively until the big day comes. And if you are Joe Burrow doing that, it has been a terrifying week because Penei Sewell is what you need. You're the guy who has torn multiple ligaments in that left knee when you were on your way to breaking every rookie quarterback record. Penei Sewell is the answer. That is the solution. However, Todd McShay has him falling all the way down, Penei Sewell, the best lineman prospect in 2 years. He has him falling down to number 13 to the Chargers, which means he protects his former teammate at Oregon, Justin Herbert, also the guy who broke all the quarterback records that you wanted to break. So, pettiness there. Also, just a general need, right? Like, if you're Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase is good. He's your old guy. You can use a receiver, but you mostly just need protection, it feels like.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're right about all those things, and Ja'Marr Chase reunited with Burrow would be nice. But I also think they should go with Penei Sewell, not just because I think he's a better overall prospect, but the hit rate on tackles in the first round is much higher than the hit rate on receivers in the first round. So you're likely to have success with that player. Then also, I think that success for quarterbacks is much more correlated with them being protected than it is with the ability of their targets. And it's not as if he's without any targets out there already. They just drafted a guy last year. And lastly, if you look at the rankings of receivers throughout last several seasons, the guys who lead the league in receptions, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, like the vast majority of them are not first round guys. So I just don't understand the logic behind and going for Ja'Marr Chase right there. Like, I could maybe get behind them going for, damn, what's that tight end's name in Florida?
Kyle Pitts. And that was going to be my point. So you there just you set me up to get in here. I'm torn here between Sewell and Pitts because I see the case for taking Penei Sewell. You guys have laid it out meticulously. The mission for Cincinnati going forward should be to protect Joe Burrow at all costs. Penei Sewell is a generational prospect. He's the kind of offensive lineman where if, like many of us, you don't understand the intricacies of offensive line play, if you're watching highlights and he stands out, yes, you know he's good. But I feel the same way about Kyle Pitts, the Florida tight end. Like, I also think he's a generational prospect. He is unbelievable. He would be incredibly helpful to Joe Burrow, too. To me, the question, as much as it is about those players, is just as much about Jonah Williams, the left tackle out of Alabama that Cincinnati drafted in the first round at 11 a couple of years ago. He missed his rookie season with an injury, missed a bunch of games last year with injuries. If they think he is healthy, he could still be the guy, and I could understand why they would go Pitts there because of the resources they've already allocated to the offensive line. But missing that many games is concerning, so I can understand why they would take Sewell as well.
How dare you? So you don't respect McShay's mock? Because McShay's mock says Pitts is gone at 4.
That's
Pitts
right.
Will not be there. Respect the mock, Mina.
It is crazy, though, to watch Penei Sewell highlights because, Mina, you're so right. I know nothing about line play at all, but when you watch like other linemen's prospects, they got to do like the spot shadow thing. And I'm like, oh, I guess that was interesting in retrospect if I play it back really slowly. But Penei Sewell, man, like, no, I would take him first in the choose your fighter character select screen.
You think Penei Sewell can protect your internet connection? Because I am so sick of watching you freeze. My God.
What's your reaction to Draymond's comments about the pay gap in women's sports?
So when Draymond Green speaks, I tend to listen. I find him to be incisive and interesting. So let's watch him challenge both of those ideas in this video.
I'm really tired of seeing them complain about the lack of pay because they're doing themselves a disservice by just complaining, you know. And
they're not just complaining.
Huh?
They're not.
God bless you.
Really.
But they are, because they're not laying out steps that they can take to change that. And so it's coming off as a complaint because the people that can change it, they're just going to continue to say, well, the revenue isn't there. The revenue isn't there. So if you don't bring in the revenue, we can't up your pay.
So it is particularly bad timing. Well, it's never good timing to be like, hey, the biggest problem is that you guys aren't listening to women, and then you entirely ignore what all of these women have been doing, especially over the last, like, month. Because last week, Megan Rapinoe was literally sitting with the president of the United States as he signed, like, a gender wage gap proclamation. And then she was testifying in front of the House Oversight Committee about the same topics. And meanwhile, WNBA players behind the scenes and very much in front of them have been like organizing to address these things very methodically, as Angel McCautry said in response to Draymond herself. So it does feel like Draymond is, I'm trying to think of something stronger than mansplaining, like mantificating, I guess. It's just so much ignoring what you want people to pay attention to, which feels incoherent.
Yeah. To me, it felt like when you get an argument with someone on the internet about an article and then you realize they actually haven't read the article, which is, first of all, don't get in that argument. But like his thesis here, as Pablo, you just pointed out, it's not only incredibly condescending, it's just incredibly inaccurate. All he has to do is listen to any of the people you mentioned in the WNBA, Sue Bird, who negotiated or helped negotiate like a groundbreaking collective bargaining agreement for the WNBA, or is pushing for more media coverage. They've created, players have created their own companies because they aren't getting the coverage. The notion that female athletes are just complaining and not taking action is abjectly ridiculous. I don't know if there's a stronger word than mantificating. Draymond-splaining? I know that doesn't really work either. I can't come up with anything, but my brain broke watching the video, much the way Kareth Burke's brain did inside the video when he proceeded to ignore her as well.
Yeah, Draymond is in the media as Draymond is on the court. Like, Draymond is an opinionated, outspoken, aggressive, emotional type of guy, which sometimes that is what you need on the court. And off the court, sometimes it is great for entertaining and it is what you need in an interview or on a set, but it also backfires. And sometimes it runs KD off to Brooklyn, and sometimes it undermines the cause that he's pushing for. But to the difference in what Draymond, I think, so let me try to mansplain what Draymond was mansplaining is, Draymond wants them to turn their pressure on to sponsors and the companies that generate the revenue or that produce the revenue for the WNBA, which in turn will then lift the pay of the women. Which, again, it seems like Draymond is saying this, and he said many times something to the effect of him being an ally and him loving the game, but this is what they need to do. You're telling people what to do. You're an ally. You love the game. You think they should get paid as much as you because they put as much in as you. Then you do it.
What I think Mina was referring to with the Sue Bird comments, it does sort of deserve to be listened to in the Draymond context, because what these athletes are asking for fundamentally is not a quality of outcome. I think realistically, everybody understands that the revenue, the businesses are so different. Sue Bird is not saying she deserves to be paid like LeBron James. What she is asking for is a quality of opportunity. Give us exposure, give us investment, let us grow our game as opposed to writing us off. And on that, I think there's a clarity and a nuance that gets lost when we're just sort of telling people what to do without reading the reading.
Up next on HQ.
But I kind of felt like that cat was trying to become a meme, right? Like he was deliberate. He saw the opportunity to be commemorated forever. Like, me, like, getting out of one bad relationship and jumping into another, or, like, 2020, like, looking at 2021, or, like, you know, ooh, like, solving one problem but finding another one.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com.
Do you question if Texas Tech's AD is right to be this salty about Chris Beard leaving?
I appreciate you leaving the pronunciation of the Texas Tech AD's name to me. It is Kirby Hocut. Yes, Kirby Hocut is very salty because Chris Beard, his former coach now, left to go be the head coach at the University of Texas. Let's listen.
You know, we're going to fight, to use a term that Coach Beard uses every day. You get in the fight. We've been in the fight for 5 years, and the fight's not over. And you have somebody that then walks away to go to an in-conference school, an in-state school, absolutely that frustrates you. I don't fully understand it. It obviously wasn't for better fan support or better facilities. And there's no doubt in my mind that when we go to Austin, the Red Raider Nation will occupy a majority of their arena, just as we have done in the past.
The reading of, like, the WWE, like, cutting of the promo off the paper, does it bode well for future extemporaneous stylings for Mr. Hocut? I will also point out that if you're just, like, if you transcribed, like, everything he said, but just put it in, like, text bubble format, and you just had Chris Beard not replying, it would also kind of read similarly, right? Like, this is a guy who was broken up with and has many things to say about it.
That's exactly how I felt watching that. He needs the friend who takes your phone away after you get dumped and is like, don't send that call. Don't post that IG. Don't leave that comment on their page. You got to spend like 24 comments. Hours away from technology because at this moment you are an open wound. That's what we saw right there, a man who was deep in his feelings.
I like this. I was going to go a different way, but I'm going to follow you guys down this road. What he is doing is talking to his friends. This is what you do after you break up and talking to your friends. That's not what he's texting on the side. I guarantee Beard is getting a whole nother line of text. He's getting a baby, I love you. Like, remember that time when we won that game? You remember the time when we went to dinner? But that thing that you really like that I only do on your birthday, I'll do it every day. He is bringing all that to the text. But in front of his friends, I don't care nothing about it. I never loved him anyway.
Do you question if this cat will learn from this?
I'm going to guess no, but let's watch.
They saved him.
That's a cat in a bucket out of a wildcat.
What is this? Where are we with all these holes?
Oh, my God.
Oh, this is not good for cats.
Not a good look. Aren't they supposed to be the smart ones? I thought dogs were supposed to be dumb and cats are smart.
That felt like a saying, like an old-timey saying, but in actual real life. Well, you know what they say about a cat in a well? You can't put it in a bucket and then expect it to not jump in another well. Like
that's how I felt. Like, I felt like maybe this is just my brain being on the internet way too much. Shocker. But I kind of felt like that cat was trying to become a meme, right? Like, he saw the opportunity to be commemorated forever. Like, me, like, getting out of one bad relationship and jumping into another. Or, like, 2020, like, looking at 2021. Or, like, you know, like solving one problem, but finding another one.
Dominique, I think what Mina just gave us there was the first documented instance of a human being projecting their own psychology onto a cat.
Okay, but imagine this, the video, it's on Twitter. Introverts be like.
Again, the shoulder, it's this. It's always this.
Oh, that's when you make a point, like a sassy point.
Tonight at 8:40 p.m. Eastern, Dodgers and Rockies.
The Dodgers are the prohibitive favorite in Major League Baseball. They won the World Series last year. They are the best oiled machine, maybe in sports. Let's watch.
Mariners are undefeated, but
there goes Cody Bellinger. He hits home runs. That is a home run right there. And Justin Turner is on the base paths. He should be the first run that scores on a two-run home run. But Justin Turner did not think that was so, because this is him rounding second and then thinking, oh, I got to go all the way back to first because I need to not get thrown out. Except, wait a minute, that was my teammate, Cody Bellinger, which means per the laws of baseball, Cody Bellinger is now the owner of a single. So very good job by everybody. Dominique, are you intrigued?
I'm not intrigued, but I'm very confused at what, like, do they have awareness scores? Like, I've never played, like, a baseball game on video games. I've played football and basketball and soccer games. They have awareness scores, and it's like how alert a player is. It's clear to me that Cody Bellinger lacks awareness. I was going to blame Turner. Bellinger lacks awareness. Bellinger's watching the ball. He sees that it looks like it's being caught. And instead of retracking or getting in front of Turner or waving Turner down, he stands there and lets him run by him. It's Bellinger's responsibility right there. I determine, as the only athlete on the show. There we go.
Literally, I never watch baseball. You should never talk about baseball.
What's baseball?
Mina Kimes, are you intrigued?
I am not intrigued, and I am also shocked that Justin Turner was somewhere he wasn't supposed to be. That has never happened before.
That's all from Highly Questionable. I'm Pablo Torre, Dominique Foxworth, Mina Kimes. We are on all sorts of other platforms. You can find us, but most importantly, ESPN Daily. I forget to promote the podcast sometimes, so ESPN Daily. You guys are fine with that, right?
Why is that the most of, I mean...
Sure, I guess.
Sure.
I mean, you need it the most.
Yeah, I do.